Genesis 45. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Make everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." And when they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be ploughing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt. Now, hurry back to my father and say to him, 'This is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you, your children, your grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have. I will provide for you there, because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute. You can see for yourselves, and so can my brother Benjamin, that it is really I who am speaking to you. Tell my father about all the honor accorded to me in Egypt, and about everything that you have seen, and bring my father down here quickly." Then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept. And Benjamin embraced him, weeping. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. Afterwards, his brothers talked with him. When the news reached Pharaoh's palace that Joseph's brothers had come, Pharaoh and all his officials were pleased. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Tell your brothers, do this. Load your animals and return to the land of Canaan, and bring your father and your families back to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you can enjoy the fat of the land. You are also directed to tell them, do this, take some carts from Egypt for your children and your wives, and get your father and come. Never mind about your belongings, because the best of Egypt will be yours." So the sons of Israel did this. Joseph gave them carts, as Pharaoh had commanded, and he also gave them provisions for their journey. To each of them he gave new clothing, but to Benjamin he gave 300 shekels of silver and 5 sets of clothes. And this is what he sent to his father: 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread, and other provisions for his journey. Then he sent his brothers away, and as they were leaving, he said to them, "Don't quarrel on the way." So they went up out of Egypt and came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan. They told him, "Joseph is still alive. In fact, he is a ruler of all Egypt." Jacob was stunned. He did not believe them. But when they told him everything Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts Joseph had sent to carry him back, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And Israel said, I am convinced my son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. So Israel set out with all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob. Here I am, he replied. I am God, the God of your father, he said. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again, and Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. Then Jacob left Beersheba, and Israel's sons took their father Jacob and their children and their wives in the carts that Pharaoh had sent to transport him. They also took with him their livestock, their possessions, the possessions they had acquired in Canaan. And Jacob and all his offsprings went to Egypt. He took with him to Egypt his sons, grandsons, his daughters, granddaughters, and all his offsprings. We're cutting now to Genesis 46, verse 26. All those who went down to Egypt with Jacob, those who were his direct descendants, not counting his sons' wives, numbered 66 persons. With the two sons who had been born to Joseph in Egypt, the members of Jacob's family, which went to Egypt, were 70 in all. Now Jacob sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to get directions to Goshen. And when they arrived in the region of Goshen, Joseph had his chariot made ready and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as Joseph appeared before him, he threw his arms around his father and wept for a long time. Israel said to Joseph, Now I'm ready to die, since I have seen for myself that you are still alive. Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and speak to Pharaoh, and will say to him, My brothers and my father's household, who were living in the land of Canaan, have come to me. The men are shepherds, they tend livestock, and they have brought along their flocks and herds and everything they own. When Pharaoh calls you in and asks what is your occupation, you should answer, Your servants have tended livestock from our boyhood on, just as our fathers did. Then you will be allowed to settle in the region of Goshen, for all shepherds are detestable to the Egyptians. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Here we are at the moment we've all been waiting for in this story of Joseph, the big reveal. We've followed Joseph through a real roller coaster ride. He started out as his father's beloved son, the one who was given the amazing technicolor dream coat. He's thrown into a well, threatened with death, sold into slavery by his brothers. He becomes the governor of his master's whole estate, a position of great respect and authority. Then he's falsely accused, thrown into prison. He becomes the prison governor's trusted assistant, in charge of the whole prison. Still a prisoner himself, but definitely on the up and probably enjoying the privileges of being prison top dog. He helps two fellow prisoners to interpret their dreams and hopes that one of them, Pharaoh's cupbearer, will remember him and put in a good word for him. Unfortunately, he's completely forgotten by the cupbearer until eventually the cupbearer does remember him and Joseph finds himself helping Egypt's ruler to interpret his dreams. Pharaoh puts him in charge of food production and storage for the whole of Egypt. He's now not just his father's favourite, not just Potiphar's right-hand man or the prison governor's trusted assistant, he's now in charge of a mighty nation. So after that roller coaster ride, that long journey that he's been on, I'm going to explore three ideas that come from this passage, where journeys of suffering give way to joy and delight in the living God who loves us and saves us. Firstly, we have the big reveal, the moment when the dam bursts and it all comes flooding out. And we find Joseph declaring that it's all about God. It always was and it always will be. After all those ups and downs, including a lot of suffering, we arrive at the real high point where Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. He's so emotional that his loud weeping is heard by Pharaoh's household. Is he weeping with joy or is he weeping with sadness? I think probably more likely it's mixed feelings. He's feeling joy and sadness at this very emotional time. But notice what he does to preserve the privacy of his family in this deeply moving and intimate moment. He isn't going to air the family secrets, the shame and guilt of his brothers in front of the Egyptians. So he sends everyone away except for his brothers, and then he tells them who he is, and they're filled with fear and amazement. And look at the balance here. Yes, he acknowledges that his brothers did a bad thing to him. But he mentions this only once before going on to speak of all that God has done. He says to them in verse 4, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. But do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here." And then from this point forwards, it's all about God and what God has done. Verse 5, he says, "Because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. This was God's plan." He then goes on to mention all the ways in which God has been at work. It's almost as though Joseph dismisses his brother's bad behavior and his own suffering as it grows strangely dim in the light of God's glory and grace. "God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. It was not you who sent me here, but God. God made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt. Go and tell my father Jacob that God has made me lord of all Egypt. Yes, you sold me into Egypt, but it's all about God. And after suffering comes rejoicing. After Good Friday comes Easter Sunday. After the cross comes salvation." Secondly, after this wonderful moment of reconciliation and forgiveness, when the suffering of Joseph and his brothers is finally over, you might have expected Joseph and his brothers to have enjoyed a really good party. Joseph is overjoyed to meet Benjamin safe and well. He sees the hand of God in providing for his people in their time of need. The brothers are mightily relieved that they have not been met with a vengeance and punishment that they surely deserved. But there is now some urgency in what Joseph asks them to do, and there's no time for partying at this stage. Jacob isn't getting any younger, and they need to make sure he gets the joyous news about Joseph as soon as possible before it's too late. We read towards the end of today's passage that there are over 70 people who are back at home with Jacob, and they all need to hear the good news of Joseph and how he will save his people. Remember the parallel that we've been talking about all through this series, that Joseph is a small-scale, entirely human illustration of all that Jesus has done for us. Beloved by his father, suffering for his people, triumphing over death. So as we bask in the warmth and light of God's loving kindness, his mercy, his forgiveness, as we find ourselves reconciled to God through his son Jesus, is that where it ends? Do we sit in our comfortable pews, or our not so comfortable pews, with an "I'm all right, Jack" attitude? Of course we don't. Joseph's brothers rushed back to tell their father and his household the good news that Joseph is alive. We could have had this passage as an Easter Sunday sermon, couldn't we? In the Easter story, the women who find the empty tomb are told by the angel to tell the disciples the good news that Jesus has risen. So they rush away with joy and excitement to do just that. Soon after that, we read about the Great Commission, where Jesus tells his disciples to go out and share the good news and to make disciples of all nations. So we go out with urgency to tell the good news of Jesus, the suffering, beloved Son of God, who died and now lives. We do this in our families, our workplaces, our neighbourhoods. It's why we've just had a week of events, looking up, to share the good news, the gospel, to tell others about how the living God meets us in our struggles. It's why we run regular Christianity Explored courses, Hope Explored, Simply Christianity. It's why we welcome newcomers. It's why we celebrate the opportunities that special services and events give us, weddings, christenings and funerals, matches, hatches and dispatches. Christmas, Easter, Remembrance Sunday, Harvest, all services where newcomers come and we welcome that opportunity to share the gospel with them. It's why Mother's Union welcomes people in for coffee every Friday morning. One way or another, everything that we do at St. James is for the benefit of those who do not know the great news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So as the brothers hurry back to tell the good news to Jacob and the rest of the family, we should hurry back to tell of the good news of Jesus. Thirdly, just before we move on to that moment where Jacob hears the good news about Joseph, I want to share a brief aside that struck me very personally this week from Genesis chapter 45, verse 20. That verse says, "Never mind about your belongings, because the best of Egypt will be yours." Joseph was told to leave it all behind. Well, I moved house this week on Thursday. After 26 years of living in Madeley, we've moved to Newcastle. It was our plan to move either into or closer to Audley, but we didn't manage to find a house that suited us in our price bracket. Anyway, talking about our belongings, as we packed up close to 100 boxes of cases and bags, I found myself feeling incredibly attached to stuff that really doesn't matter in the scale of things. And it was a bit scary when it was all packed into two lorries to see them driving away, hoping that they would be at the new house when we got there. There was an awful lot else at the new house when we got there, which I'll share with you another time. But that strange bit of bent metal that came off a long discarded appliance that I put away because it might come in handy one day. I now can't even remember what it is or why we kept it, but it moved house with us on Thursday. Joseph was told, never mind about your belongings. And for him, the news about Joseph moving to Egypt amounted to a very definite leaving behind of everything that was his in terms of his life as a bereaved father, his home and his belongings in Canaan. He didn't know for sure what lay ahead for him and his family in Egypt, but it required a first step of faith. But we see that to start with, Jacob doesn't dare to believe the news about Joseph. We read that he's stunned and just couldn't believe it. He's lived with the aching grief over the loss of Joseph for many years. His suffering has become a familiar and predictable part of life for him, part of his world. And as wonderful as it is, there is still a part of him that just cannot grasp the new reality before him. It feels too amazing, too risky to grasp this earth-shattering news. And this mirrors the experience of every unbeliever as they waver on the brink of taking that first step of faith. Not only does he have to have the risk of believing something new, he has to take the risk of turning away from his old life, his old place, his old things. This is also the experience of every believer as we struggle with the life's ups and downs, as we wrestle with new challenges, new discoveries, new demands that come up for us. It ought to be so easy to turn to the living God, and yet, like Jacob, we still have times when we just can't quite believe it. We hold on to our old stuff and can't see that in the scale of things, what lies ahead for us in God's plan is so much better. Have you ever sat in a service with a family member or a friend you know is not yet a Christian, listening to a powerful and convincing sermon that clearly explains the gospel? And you've been certain that this time your family member or friend must surely have got the message. How could they have not have done? And then as you ask them what they thought of the sermon, they reply with a non-committal, "It was all right." It feels like they must be numb, blind, deaf to the gospel that seems so wonderfully clear to you. Or perhaps they can glimpse the truth of it, but it feels as if they might have to leave too much behind. It might cost too much. And even as believers, we have times when we're numb, blind, deaf to what we already know deep down. Well, for Jacob, he needed a bit more than just the bald summary of the headlines. He needed to know more of the story. So as the brothers go on to explain more of their real encounter with the living Joseph, we find Jacob being strangely warmed as his eyes are finally opened to the wonderful truth. His beloved son, who was dead, now lives. Yes, we do hear of people who suddenly and surprisingly find faith in the living God in a single and dramatic moment of revelation. Like the businessman who has never had any big contact with Christians, who picks up a Gideon Bible in a hotel room, starts reading it for the first time in his life, and finds out about the living God and his son Jesus. Somehow he meets with God in a life-changing moment of revelation. But for many, if not most, like Jacob, needing to hear and learn a bit more about Joseph, their moment of turning to Christ is the culmination of a series of experiences and discoveries. The ongoing repeated conversations with a Christian grandparent, the chats over the kettle with a Christian work colleague, the informal chats with a Christian neighbour, perhaps the hearing a moving account of the gospel at a funeral, or attending Christianity Explored or Hope Explored or an Alpha course, or going for a marriage or christening preparation course, or just seeing a Christian life lived out by a Christian wife or husband. So as he finally takes that step of faith to acknowledge and accept the truth about his beloved son, Joseph, we read in verse 27 that Jacob's spirit was revived. This step of faith brought him new life. So if, like Jacob, you're struggling to take that final step of faith, please be reassured that if you do, you will be given new life. And just in case Jacob still had any lingering doubts, as he set out to Egypt, God met him in a vision, perhaps a dream. And God said to him, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again." If this was set to music, we might imagine some ominous, dramatic music at those words, like the rumble of distant thunder, warning of a storm to come. Because in the opening chapters of the next book of the Bible, Exodus, we read of how the Israelites, the descendants of Joseph and Jacob, will indeed need God to bring them out of Egypt. But that's another story for another time. But if we take that step of faith and truly believe what we say we believe in the creed, and as we continue our walk of faith with the living God, he will meet us by his Spirit and through his word, the Bible, and through the Christian brothers and sisters that he puts alongside us. Amen.